This is the Huddle Up Podcast with J.P. Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, and John Osher.
Welcome to the new era.
The Huddle Up Podcast starts right now.
Welcome into another edition of the Huddle Up Podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 14th, and plenty to get to, including news about the Jaguars' possible future quarterback. Jags defensive talk, Joe Cullen interviewed by John Osher this week. A Maurice Jones-Drew mock draft. Will we mock his mock? We'll find out. Eddie George, yeah, well, everybody knows that name well, getting into coaching, a former Jaguars rival. We'll talk a little of the HBCU talk and social media questions, all that coming up. Bucky Brooks, John Osher, J.P. Shadrick. I'll start with this today. Bucky, would you pay $300 for a toaster?
What kind of toaster is it?
It's one of the, apparently the best toaster of all time that has flat screen technology and music, and it does everything except butter the bread for you.
Now, if it buttered the bread for me, then I would be okay with it. But if it's not going to butter the bread, that's the only point. Because I was thinking, like, maybe I wake up and have like a little cinnamon raisin bread with a little butter on it, toast it a little bit, you know, a little snacky wacky to start. But if it's not going, butter the bread, then I might as well just stick it in the oven like I did since I was seven.
I'm so cheap, JP, that I can't imagine a scenario unless I'm driving it. I'm not paying $300 for a toaster.
Right, good point. And that's why Trevor and his fiance put it on the registry anyway, because let somebody else buy it.
And let somebody else buy the expensive stuff. That's great. I bet you that registry they had was magnificent.
Right. That's the story this week. The Jaguars fans pulled their money together and got the toaster for Trevor and a vacuum cleaner, and the rest will go to Trevor Lawrence's charity of choice. So a lot going on this week on Jags Twitter, Bucky.
Let's go. So the Jags fans chipped in and got the toaster and a vacuum.
Yes.
I wonder what kind of vacuum that was.
It's not a bad one.
I bet you that thing sucks up everything. I mean, man.
But kidding aside, JP, we've talked about it on a couple of the shows this week. It's a really funny, fun story. But I think there's something relatively important about it, too, in the sense that I think it does show Trevor, if he didn't know already, A, what a cool niche this fan base is and has. Because it's the Jaguars people and mm-hmm. it's Jaguars Twitter people. And JP, you and I have gotten to know a lot of these guys over the years, and the passion they have for this team is phenomenal, obviously. But I don't necessarily know that Trevor, even though he knew he was coming to Duval, I'm sure he had some sort of grasp of Duval, but I think this sort of probably wakes him up to, hey, this is a different deal now. This has potential to be fun. There's a connection. Remember how fun it was with Blake for a while before it all kind of went south? If the right guy is in that role and embraces it, how much fun is this going to be, JP?
Yeah, no doubt. It can definitely be one of those places to remember. And if things are going well, right? When things go well and things are positive, yes, Bucky, it can go great. But it can turn quickly, too. That's the other part of this thing.
I mean, it can turn quickly because it's been the other way for so long. I mean, I'll go back, like, the 90s, the heyday, like, when we started winning and those things. Like, I mean, it was a big party. And even if you bring it full circle back to 2017 with Jalen and that crew, Saxonville, it looked like it was festive and fun. Like, that is how you want it to be. And with a quarterback like Trevor coming in, I think the great thing about Trevor is, to me, he appears to have the right demeanor and disposition to handle being the franchise quarterback. Like, I think he understands it. He's always had the weight of the world on his shoulders as a guy who's been hailed as the number one quarterback since he was, I mean, a mid-teenager. I think there's something different about it. The fact that he just married his longtime girlfriend, he's married, he's settled, he's mature by all accounts. I think he's the right guy for it. I think it'd be a really good fit with him and the team and the city and all those other things.
JP, something has to happen at some point where we figure out that the kid's not perfect. I mean, no, so far I've had nothing. I'm not saying it's a negative. It's unbelievable how picture perfect this guy is, but
I mean, he's a good kid. Like, and talking to his parents and all that other stuff, he just always has kind of been on the line. I'm not saying that there won't be anything that comes up or he'll handle every situation correctly, but his maturity, I mean, that might be his best trait, like how mature he is in handling all of the other stuff and not really being caught up in the life. And I think, I mean, you know it, you're in Indianapolis around Peyton, and he talked about how he always aspired to be like Peyton Manning. Man, some guys get it, you know, and I think he got it at a very early age. And I think if you go back just from a philosophical standpoint, when it comes to franchise quarterbacks, we used to always think about, is he presidential? Like, can he carry himself like that? Like, can you see him in front of the mic with a regalness about him? And I think with Trevor, the way that he handles it, the way that he's well-schooled, the way that he kind of has it, like he has that. And I can't confidently say that every other quarterback that would have been in that position would appear to check off those boxes.
We continue our conversation here on the Huddle Up podcast. Trevor Lawrence apparently is in the Jaguars playbook, according to reports this week on NFL Network, getting an early look at the Jaguars scheme. It's something we talked about a few weeks ago. You give pieces of the playbook to some of these prospects to see how they can spit it back. But the reports that we saw, you know, it sounds like a little more than that, Bucky, from the reports from Ian Rappaport.
Well, that's the beauty of having a number one pick and knowing exactly who it is. It's very similar to what the Cincinnati Bengals did a year ago with Joe Burrow. He had all the stuff. He was ready to go. There was no quarterback competition coming into camp. They basically built it around what he could do. And I would anticipate the Jaguars will do the same. This will be a bit of a cooperation to kind of figure out where Trevor is. Coach Bevel, Coach Schottenheimer, Coach Meyer will get together and they will try and put together an offense that works for him. I still would say when I look at the strength of the team as it's presently constructed, offensive line, running game, Trevor acting as the manager until he's ready to do more. I think if we ask Coach Meyer the perfect scenario, I think that would be the perfect scenario, that Trevor doesn't have to, in the first 8 games of the year, throw it 35 to 40 times for the Jaguars to stay in games. If they could control it with their O-line, the running game, play good enough defense, I would say that he would probably believe that that is the best formula for Trevor. And I think that is probably the best progression for Trevor to make.
Speed back at 25 or 33, JP.
I like it. Saying it. I like it.
You know,
speed.
Get him some impact. You know, some sudden stuff.
Oh, so you're saying go all in on the offense? Build up one side of the ball?
40 burgers. 40 burgers.
Team 40 I'm burger, saying, that's what we're saying? Go for it.
Right. I'm saying buy defense, draft offense, makes some sense in terms of how you're trying to build this thing.
If you're wanting, you want to get great on one side of the ball. You can't go both ways or whatever. Like, you want to get great on one side. So if you're going to say Trevor and then, hey, let's load up the offense. Let's make sure he has – what he needs. We need a tight end at some point. You need someone that can control the middle of the field. I wouldn't say that Tyler Eifert is the guy. You need a young, dynamic tight end that can make it happen. I would say another receiver. And yes, you absolutely could take another back. Carlos Hyde's arrival wouldn't prohibit me from that. In fact, I would say James Robinson's presence wouldn't prevent me from taking another back. This is a class where in third round, you can get a very talented back. And that back could be as effective as what is currently on the roster. I think you have to keep spinning the wheels and adding talent to the puzzle.
This is the Huddle Up podcast. Subscribe to the official Jaguars podcast network on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, and give us the 5-star treatment. And remember, the Travel Camp RV Duval Draft 2021 is coming up Thursday, April 29th. Registration is open currently to season ticket members only. And if there are seats still available after that, the general public can register starting this Thursday. Jaguars.com/DuvalDraft21. That's 3 U's in Duval. Check out the website and register there. Some late afternoon news Tuesday. You know, we're talking about the new offense. What's it going to look like? It would help a young quarterback and a new coaching staff to be able to go through some of these things on the practice field in the offseason. But the NFL Players Association put out statements on behalf of the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks, at least as of the taping of this podcast, saying that basically both teams are going to stay away from the offseason program. You know, that's not ideal, and not every team has done this yet. What's your feeling on this, though, Bucky? Will this end up being every team, every player, or is it kind of depending on the situation?
Man, it's a tough one because one of those things that was, I can't say that it was completely unexpected because J.C. Tretter had put out a letter and talked about last year's offseason, the virtual offseason, fewer injuries, actually better tackling, points were up, all of these things. And so you knew at that point the NFLPA was plotting a course where they didn't want to engage in the offseason of old. And also, I think there was a door cracked open when you had the additional game and that comes in. Then you have to begin to renegotiate what the offseason program and all those things look like. And players, veteran players in particular, have grown weary of coming to facility and having these camps and practices on grass. And so they're kind of like, why are we doing this? What is this about? The injury risk that is associated with those things certainly are valid. The players who get caught up in this are the undrafted free agents and the guys at the bottom of the roster clinging on, because now you don't get a chance to make a first impression for your coaches. You don't get a chance to develop mastering the techniques that the team requires and the scheme and those things. And so now you're going to be evaluated in a 6-week period in training camp and preseason. That's a tough deal.
You know, I don't like it, Buck.
Yeah, John, we were talking about this the other day. I mean, it's not even just the undrafted guys trying to make the roster. It's a guy, John, like Kalyvon Chaisson, who needs technique. He needs to go out and practice.
Look, I'm fine with the whole voluntary. You know, JP's read my stuff for years. He's heard me say it a million times. I hate the offseason program. I'm not a big fan of standing on the field during OTAs. I don't think veteran teams get very much out of it. I get all that. And if JP's heard me complain about OTAs once, he's heard it a million times. But, big but here, if you're going to ask coaches to get guys better, then you better give them some time to work with those guys. Don't do this and then have players behind their back blaming coaching for stuff. They don't get enough time during training camp. You get 2.5 weeks with guys on training camp, and then all of a sudden the season starts, and you're on the field. And as Bucky knows, you're not working on pass rushing one-on-one technique on October 7th. You're doing that in training camp. 2.5 weeks, that's all the time you get with a guy? Well, don't draft any more developmental players if you're doing this. Tell all the guys who are in college who need developmental time, their careers are done, baby. It's over. And, you know, it just annoys me. It's already voluntary. The veterans don't have to come. But guys who need it and young coaches, or not young coaches, first-year coaches, they should be allowed to have stuff in the offseason to develop the camaraderie.
Yeah, I think, and I can't remember exactly what the acclimation period was like, but players were in favor of a return to the acclimation period that happened right before training camp, where it was a slow ramp up to training camp and padded practices. Because
it still takes
like,
some days away.
Yeah, it felt like guys were better prepared to initiate the contact, because under the old way, the old offseason program, you do all those things. People would leave the middle of June, come back July, you check in, and 2 days later, you're on the grass. And it's as if you've been there the entire time. I believe you still can develop them. Maybe they do away with the team part of OTAs and allow guys to have individual time and individual skill development work or those things. Maybe kind of like the NBA does with their skill development players. There has to be a middle ground for players and coaches to get what they need. But I knew it would be contentious, and we are seeing how teams are already, or players are beginning to opt out of these offseason workouts.
I'm not sure the quality of play was better last year, Bucky. I mean,
I'm not saying that
there must be data.
Yeah.
You know, and they're saying
They mentioned it in the statements. I didn't exactly see what it was.
I didn't think it was better early in the season. I think I'm just an old man.
They're talking about the points being up and those things, because everything is always judged on the entertainment value, which is offense. So the offense may start ahead of the defense, particularly with the rules and all that other stuff. It takes a while for the guys to catch up. You know, I don't know. Like, as someone who, I mean, anytime you put any football on TV, I'm going to look at it. So the fact that we had mini camp and training camp madness, and guys go all over, and I'm looking at training camp practices, inter-squad practices, I don't know. I mean, I kind of dig it, but I also understand why people don't want to do too much to tax their bodies.
This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, John Osier. Season ticket renewals. Existing season ticket members, you better lock in your seats right now. Very soon, those who place deposits for new season tickets will be able to select seats, and they could select yours if you haven't renewed. So you better renew today. Check the renewal link in your email, visit jaguars.com, or call 904-633-2000. There are a team of representatives ready to help you get back in the bank in 2021. Subscribe to the official Jaguars Podcast Network on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, and leave us a comment.
I have a question about the bank, because I haven't had an opportunity to go to the bank since COVID and all those other things. That's so right. I need to know, is there's a pool in the bank, right? Is there
two spa cabanas.
Two pools,
yes. Two spa cabanas, John. Yes.
The two spa cabanas, like, yes, behind the end zones, or where, up high?
One end zone up above. They took out some seats some years ago and put in a north end zone deck. And on that deck, there's a double deck rows of cabana tent kind of couch seating. Uh-huh. And some of those are connected to the water features. Yes.
Oh,
correct.
Wow.
So two different swimming locations.
Yeah. Really?
JP has a cot there, Bucky, is why he knows about it.
I was just wondering. I feel like I would like to have like a watch party from the waterworks and the cabana. Like, I feel like that'd be a good spot. I don't know, we all have to work on game day, but I feel like JP,
Bucky, if you have a credit card, I feel like they will allow you to get like, that out anytime.
I feel like, I mean, we talked about toasters. I feel like since we're already at a $300 toaster, we might as well enjoy ourselves.
They will take your money, buddy. Yeah.
Call 904-633-2000 and they'll take it over the phone.
I feel like maybe with the employee discount, like maybe we could get a couple dollars knocked off, you know?
They're not that big on that.
Yeah. I thought we could get a couple dollars knocked off and maybe have some tableside guac while we're watching the game, you know?
On the big boards, right? Watch the game. The whole thing.
I mean, what? I mean, pretty new show and tell with Trevor and all that. So, okay.
All right. We'll hold off. We'll keep that idea flowing, though. Are you guys ready to mock a mock?
Yes.
I know John's always ready. Maurice Jones-Drew.
If it's MJD's mock, I'm mocking it.
Well, yeah. We are about to mention Maurice Jones-Drew put out his latest mock draft earlier this week. Number one, mm-hmm, he picked Trevor Lawrence. He really went out on a limb on that one.
Yeah.
Number 25, though, he goes with safety Javon Holland out of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And here's his quote. He says, quote, having coached Holland at KT Prep, I know just how valuable he can be for the Jaguars secondary as a versatile player. He can play safety, cornerback, nickel, or weak side linebacker, and has the goods to cover slot receivers and tight ends. He'll immediately boost any unit, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Buck?
Well, I like Holland. Holland is a really good prospect. I also know MJD very, very well. Our Jaguar ties are real and established, and I would say that the little blurb that he mentioned with KT Prep,
yeah,
the his 7-on-7 team and private training company, like I'm pretty positive that impacted and influenced his view on Holland as a first round pick. I don't quite know if he is a first rounder, but I will say that the Jaguars definitely need someone in the secondary that can do, I guess, can occupy the Swiss Army knife role, meaning they can come down and play in the nickel if they can do some weak side linebacker stuff and blitz and cover and all those. The new age of defense requires that you have some guys that are kind of positionless players in the secondary. Holland appears to have some of that capacity.
John, you want to mock this mock?
I'm fine with the concept. Well, for mock drafts, I look for, does the guy sort of know what the team is looking at in certain situations? I think it makes perfect sense to say the Jaguars are going to look at safety. When I look at the Jaguars this year, I kind of look at all those 65, you know, the top 65. They have five in the top 65. I believe there's a few combinations of things they will try to get done in that top 65. Obviously, quarterback's going to be one. And I think they're going to take some version of two speed players, a safety, tight end, or a defensive tackle. So I just mentioned one of those things won't happen. But I think in that realm, I think they're going to be in that direction. So a safety, a Swiss Army knife guy, makes perfect sense. I don't know if this guy is going to be at 25 or 33 or 45, but something along those lines makes sense. I think the instinct's right, even if the guy is not.
You know, I'm so fascinated without talking to Trent or Coach Meyer. I just wonder how they view the roster, the strong points and the weak points, and what are the must-haves? What are the things when you come out of the draft that, hey, we must have this position filled when we finish draft day weekend? And when we mean filled with the top pick, not a developmental guy that's taken in the fifth, sixth, or seventh, but someone using an expensive draft chip, how can we fill it? What are those most pressing
needs?
I feel
like needs? They've got six expensive draft chips, Buck. I feel like maybe down to the fourth round, you could sort of qualify if you do that. So I feel like they've got six guys right now that they could feel relatively strongly about maybe fitting them in somewhere. You know, speed guy that I'm talking about could happen at running back in the fourth round. Like, you can get that element there. It feels like tight end, you've got to get somewhere in the top four rounds.
Yes.
But it tapers off so fast after Pitts that you wonder if it'll fit.
Yeah. There's someone they can land within the first 65. They're three tight ends, Freiermuth, Hunter Long, Brevin Jordan, that would, I would say, be in play day two, second or third round. Those guys should go. After that, Trey McKitty and those guys are more your day four developmental types. Here's the thing on a bigger picture. When we think about the Jaguars, and let's think pie in the sky moment in 2 to 3 years, for this team to be a championship team, you need to have 10 to 12 what we call blue chip players, meaning players that reasonably ranked top five of their position, top 10 of their position around the league. And so as we're looking at the team that's constructed now, and as we're thinking about acquiring players, to build a championship team, we have to acquire those kind of players. It has to be to that standard. And so it's really important this first draft with Trent that they get foundational players, guys that are going to be around for a while and really impact it. So yes, we can say Trevor Lawrence is one of those. But how do they go about picking those blue chip players in the draft? And which blue chip players do they feel like are already on the roster? You know, because if you ask me, I would say Miles Jack would probably qualify in that category. I mean, who else?
Josh Allen.
Yeah. Like who? Okay. So we have two.
Yeah.
So we have those two guys. But man, we still need nine more guys. And then after those 10 to 12 blue chippers, you need a bunch of reds that are solid starters that contribute, that you count on week in, week out. It will be interesting to see over the next 2 years or so how quickly they can kind of tally up some of those numbers.
Do you feel like, Buck, that there are guys who they feel close, not quite there yet?
Yeah, I feel like DJ Chark could be a guy that emerges as that. He may not earn Pro Bowl recognition, maybe he does, but I think he could potentially emerge as that. CJ Henderson was drafted to be that kind of player. So now he has to play up to that potential. I mean, when you take a guy like Kalavon Chase and where you take him, you expect him to emerge and be that. On the offensive line, anybody that we feel like on the offensive line could be that piece? I know Cam Robinson is on that franchise money, but do we believe that he can be a top five, top 10 offensive tackle? So some of it is,
Taylor ought to be a right tackle at some point, but hadn't been there yet.
So it's either acquisition or development. You know, those are the two areas. And when you listen to Coach Meyer talk, that's what he talks about, is player acquisition and player development. So the Jags have to knock it out of the park in those two aspects to quickly return to prominence.
This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, NFL media analyst, John Osier, Jaguars.com senior writer. You know, it's been a long time ago since Trent Baalke had his first draft in San Francisco. And if you remember, you know, he took over late in that process in 2010, like a month before the draft. There was some front office shakeup. And then all of a sudden he's in charge of the draft a month later. And he did some wheeling and dealing in that draft that affected the next couple of years of the 49ers draft situation. How much does that matter now, his history? You know, he may not have had a lot of that in the last few years in San Francisco, but that's 10, 11 years ago. Traded back to the third round. They got Navarro Bowman that year and a fourth round pick. But then the next year, they moved up from 45 to 36, used that additional fourth round pick to get Colin Kaepernick. And those are big pieces of that Super Bowl run, of course. It's too far removed, right, to really look too far into that.
No, it speaks to how he treats the draft when he feels conviction about a player or players, that if he feels like there's a player that can be an impact player, he's willing to move up and get him. I didn't even realize that they traded up to get in range to get Cap. I mean, he was a huge addition and a huge part of their run to the Super Bowl. Navarro Bowman team with Patrick Willis, they locked down the middle of that 49ers defense for years. That speaks to it. Now, there are going to be some swings and misses because when you go and you check there's some guys that were taken that you're like, that was a bit of a reach. But he also hit an Alden Smith. Alden Smith came into the league and had a pretty pedestrian collegiate career. But, I mean, first 3 years, he's one of the – like, he was trending towards all-time great status. So, Balky definitely has an eye for talent. He knows exactly what he's looking for. The key will be, can he and Coach Meyer get on the same page when it comes to who they're bringing in? I think this is
said a lot. Everything I heard about the Senior Bowl was that's what this guy likes to do. Trent Baalke likes to move around in the draft and get in spots where he thinks there's value in the draft. He likes to try to maximize picks there. Mm-hmm. And that he can do it, like JP said, but with an eye on the next year. And I've heard different things from people. We had Tony Pauline on, who's a very good draft guy as well. Mm-hmm. Said he thinks that next year's draft, deeper in the draft, should be better than this year's draft deep in the draft. Like, you're going to see more good fifth, sixth round picks because of all the guys who went back to school this year. So could Trent later in the draft, if he doesn't like sixth round picks this year, could he try to trade for fifth and sixth round picks next year? He talks about value, and that seems to be in line with somebody who likes to try to find a lot of value in the draft. So I think watching him in this year's draft is going to be fascinating to learn how he likes to operate.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how Balky approaches all of it. The draft, the look ahead, because it's an uneven playing field. So how can I judge who's normally going to pop their final season and kind of when you don't have those things? And so how much do you know about the 2022 class that comes into play when you're making some decisions on 2021? It's a different landscape, man. It's more volatile, more wild, wild west-like than I ever can imagine, ever can remember.
And you probably know less about that 2022 class than any class in a long, long time, right? Because they're still sort of young.
Yes.
It's hard to know who sleepers are going to be in that thing. Yep.
Yeah, it's a different deal. Just a completely different deal.
This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, John Osier. Let's touch on one note around the league. I guess it's not really around the league. It's around football. It's around the sport, I suppose, but it's a familiar name to Jaguars fans and folks in this division and in this place and in the past of this franchise. Eddie George, you probably heard of him. 1995 Heisman Trophy winner, 9 NFL seasons, over 10,000 yards rushing, 4-time Pro Bowler. He's revered in Nashville, of course. He was named head coach of the Tennessee State Tigers. They're in the Ohio Valley Conference now, but he doesn't have coaching experience. But it's a trend now to have some former players coaching historically black colleges and universities. Yep. Deion Sanders is at Jackson State. Tyrone Wheatley is at Morgan State now, former Jaguars running backs coach and a great running back in his own right, of course. I saw something that kind of struck me on this the other day. Somebody said, hey, this could be another heyday of HBCU football. It will never be the heyday of the 50s and 60s. When all the black football players had to go to black colleges, they weren't allowed. It was segregated schools. And once the 1970-71 happened, the big Southern schools became desegregated. Those players could go to Alabama and Tennessee and places like that. And that brand of football wasn't quite the same. There's still players at these schools, Bucky.
Yeah, but it's different.
It's different now. And I guess there's a couple questions here. First off, what do you think of the move to hire Eddie George? And second, there is still quality football played.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting time because you have a bunch of former players who want to be coaches, who a bunch of coaches in general who aspire to be the head of programs, and many of them have cast a bad eye or frowned upon going to HBCUs. With Deion going and bringing so much attention to Jackson State, it's kind of changed the narrative a little bit because he's elevated the profile in those things. Eddie George steps into a situation that has Tennessee State has tradition and has talent. There have been players that have come through there. But as a first-time head coach, it's a different situation because you're stepping in somewhere that doesn't have resources. And so how does he put an infrastructure in place to help him? Well, on the streets, they're saying Jeff Fisher may come on board because it's right there in Nashville. He has a house. Hugh Jackson could potentially come on board to be his offensive coordinator. And there's some others who could come on board to help him, but it's a different hustle. It's a different hustle than what he's used to.
Yeah, it's a different situation. And, Deion going back, Deion's name is so big and so current because of the work he did on NFL Network and because he's prime. I'm going to say he's Jordan, but
yeah,
he still has cachet among the young players. Eddie George, who I got a chance to get to know a little bit tangentially when I was covering the Jags. I flipped to Tennessee a lot back when paper still did that. I was around Eddie George a lot and always thought that he could be a coach. His personality, his ability to handle situations, to speak to issues in the media. He had a little bit of a presidential thing, to refer to what Buck said earlier. He's got that personality type. I don't doubt that he could succeed in coaching, the communication, those things, be very good at. I don't know enough about Tennessee State to know what his situation will be there. It makes sense to me, though, to hire these name guys to do these jobs because so much of recruiting at that level, I would think, is name recognition, A, and can this guy get me some recognition if I am good enough to go to the next level, which is always a dream. So there's a little bit of that where name recognition, star power makes sense for it. But I don't know enough about Tennessee State to know if this works for Eddie George or not.
Yeah. And looking at it, just popping in their record, they've been national champions, Black College national champions, a bunch of times, maybe 12 times. They've had some notable players, notable teams come through there. When you think about Richard Dent, how about that?
Yeah.
Benny Anderson, Ed Too Tall Jones. Larry Kennebrew. I remember Dominic Rogers Cromartie. So they've had good players come through there. So he's not just stepping into a program that's not rich with tradition. It's a matter of how quickly can he adapt to being a coach? Because being a coach is unlike any other thing that he has done. How quickly does he adjust to that part of it?
I was trying to think, since we were going to have this conversation, the most notable HBCU player in Jaguars history. And I'd have to say Rasheen Mathis, right? Bethune-Cookman. Yeah. He's probably
Smith, baby.
Jay right Smooth, there. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's funny because
– you got to go a long way to knock Jay Smooth off that one.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, if you go all the way back, former general manager James Shaq Harris, always, at that time, Jacksonville, always invested heavily in HBCUs. It was not uncommon to have one or two guys show up for opportunities and those things. And it's been a very fertile ground for development for some of these kids. I mean, we all have these success stories with guys that we play with at Harvard. I mean, we've seen it. And we've seen that those institutions give some guys opportunities. And if you can land on one like Eddie George did, if you have some cachet or whatever, you can do it the right way. And I think that's the big thing. Deion has gotten partnerships with these companies and apparel companies and people to help him infuse the program with money and those things. Someone has to do that for Eddie George to give him an opportunity to really be successful.
And there is a new showcase game this year for HBCU players, the Legacy Bowl. We played the Saturday after the Super Bowl at Yulman Stadium in New Orleans on the Tulane campus, and that'll be a good spotlight for a lot of guys at that level. Looking forward to that. Let's wrap up with a few social media questions today, gentlemen. At Danton Thomas with a report of TL, I'm guessing that's Trevor Lawrence, getting the playbook and processing it well. What type of impact will that have on the team when they get to OTAs, et cetera? Well, we just talked about it. We don't know if there's going to even be that. But if he has a step ahead, Bucky, that has to be a positive thing. There's a reasoning behind it.
Yeah, there's a reason behind it. He may be able to know it, like up here, but going through and executing in-game action, is a little different. But let's be honest. Now these guys, these top quarterbacks, they hire gurus. The guru calls the coach. They get the plays and the playbook, and away they go, and they train.
Can't hurt. They're the plays. I mean, yeah, it's kind of obvious. But, Buck, most of these guys, once they know where they're going, they have an idea. Not surprising that Trevor has it, but you've got to get again, I go back to this is a perfect example of situation. There's no way these young guys don't want to be here during the next 2 months to try to learn as much as possible. And if they don't want to be here the next 2 months to try to learn as possible, then you've drafted the wrong guy. For young players. Again, I'm not saying it for – I'm not saying it
– Coach Mike. Coach
Miles
Mike.
Jack, I don't care if he's here in Urban's second year. But for this new situation, they need to be here. So I'm off topic a little bit. I'm still angry.
John's Coach, all over it. They're consistent. Coach super Meyer. Consistent today.
Coach Meyer. Coach Meyer has pulled you in and let you drink some of that teal Kool-Aid. You're on it.
It honestly has nothing to do with that. I'm saying for any young player.
That's right.
Man.
I get it.
If you don't think you want to be in OTAs in May, I don't want to be there, but they should be. I mean,
JP, John operates under that voluntary mandatory.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, we're going to have a voluntary meeting, you know. Yeah.
Voluntold. Okay.
Here's my ideal OTA. Here's my ideal OTA, JP. Every player who is not in their second contract, first year head coaches, and no senior writers. How about that? How's that for a great OTA?
Wow, that's some fine print right there. I'll tell you.
Very fine.
It can be set up however they want to set it up as long as Johnny O ain't there.
very fine print.
Our next question from Matt Evanoff, Joel, and this is a little broad, Bucky, but stay with us. At pick 25, do you go with a position you need or best available? And who are some names you could see sliding the 25 that are higher on the board and a lot of mocks? I know we all see a lot of mocks, but is there a great slide this year in your mind?
Defensive players will get kicked out of the first 10 picks because of the fascination with the quarterbacks and skill guys and those things. So I would expect to see some top defenders fall back. I would also maybe that impacts the tackle class where you see two distinct divisions. You see Bear Tucker, Sewell, Slater, those guys go, and then you come back down and Darashaw, Jenkins, Mayfield, those guys are in their own category. You'll see some sliders. I think for Jacksonville, if you operate under the premise to take the best player available, there are going to be plenty of good players available. You just have to hand in the card.
I do believe they've set themselves up where they can lean a lot more toward best available and value at that spot. Given their situation, I don't think there's a need. I don't think there's a reason to reach for a need there, because how much is that guy at 25? Say they reach for a need and Merrick's there from TCU. Well, that's not a bad pick. That's fine. But they're not in a position roster-wise where they're saying, hey, if we just get this wide receiver, it's going to put us over the top. So I'd be shocked if they don't get a good value mix there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, man. That's such a tough deal. I mean, if we were doing it correctly, if we really had a draft board and we're talking about Jags prospects, it really should only have 75 to 100 names. That way you prune the trees, you keep everything out, you know exactly who you want to target, how you want to manipulate the board to make sure you get in range to get a handful of your guys. And then you just kind of have to roll with it.
Final question today comes from Argentina at Waco Garina. What can we get for the 25th pick trading down, and with whom would be a great spot? And also in addition here, my first baby was just born named Noah, and he'll be joining me watching Jags draft day. Super hype. Well, congratulations. On the newborn. That's fantastic. Well, he doesn't want to pick 25th. He wants to trade out. Where would they go, Bucky? Or should they just pick it?
You don't want to go too far out if you go. There are going to be teams that want to rush up to get maybe the final quarterback or one of the tier one pass rushers, something that is hard to find in the draft. Man, I don't know what you can give up to get that back. Like, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a tough one. I would say you don't. I would say you don't want to go too far in the 30s. So if I'm trading out the second one, I'll fall back into the second round, but I don't want to go too far out because I'm still going to probably land a good player.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you would want to go past I think you would want to get in exchange something between 33 and 45. Those are the two picks they have there. I think if you're going back, you'd want to stay still in that range, because I'm with Bucky. It seems like there's starters available at that range. But then in addition, what would you want, Bucky? You'd want a third rounder to move? I mean, could you get a third rounder to get you to drop that back that far?
Yeah, I mean, you have to give a third. It wouldn't be worth it to me, because I prefer players over picks. So I would rather know exactly what I'm getting than him and Hall and wait. But there is something to that for sure.
There you have it, our social questions. Thank you for the submissions on Tuesday afternoon. We are 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It's almost here, Bucky. We will talk to you again next week.
Man, let's get it.
John, we'll talk to you later today.
I can't wait, JP. I cannot wait.
For Bucky and John, I'm JP Shadrick. Remember to subscribe to the official Jaguars Podcast Network on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you can download podcasts. Get the 5-star rating in there and give us a comment as well. We'll see you next time on the Huddle Up Podcast.